is a little bit of a different format. We're going to kind of do a roundtable panel discussion. The panelists that were willing to join us today, and I just want to acknowledge everybody's willingness to show up because nobody had prepared questions ahead of time, so they have no idea what they're going to be asked. But we've got Sue, Melissa, Brandon, and Craig here to share their experience on relationships. I think maybe when we hear that topic, some of us assume we're talking about romantic relationships, but really that's not necessarily the focus of today's discussion. I am going to read just a couple paragraphs out of our literature from The Living Clean on the chapter entitled Relationships as a way to kind of kick us off. We don't get long-term recovery without having relationships, both in and out of the rooms. It's the meat and potatoes of life and the dessert. Relationships affect everything we do and everything we are. The ways we respond to our experiences shape who we become. When we are willing to stay in recovery, to allow ourselves to grow and change, we experience a full range of emotions. That we get clean at all is a miracle, but it doesn't stop there. We grow to be steady, reliable, loving people who can be a force for change in the lives of other addicts and beyond. Relationships are central to everything we do. There is no step or tradition that is not somehow about relationships. And all our literature talks about relationships in some way or another. There is no other area in our recovery that causes us more pain or more joy. It's where we see our growth and our recovery most clearly. So kind of my first question is just about early relationships. If you kind of think back to when you first came to the rooms, you know, maybe just talk about that first person that you clearly remember from an early meeting and how that relationship went, and whoever wants to share.
My name is Craig, and I'm an addict. I think this is a great topic, actually, because I think it's the pink elephant in the room at all meetings. But I can tell you that, without a doubt, I made every wrong mistake when I first got in the rooms and didn't take any suggestions when it came to relationships. So when she asked about the first relationship, it was very dysfunctional, and really it had everything more to do with 13 step than the first 12. And I got in trouble. I mean, you know, it was everything they said it would be. And I went too far. And emotionally, I was strung out with the whole thing, and I was obsessed with it, you know, and I can recall it very well. And it became, you know, one of those things where when I was in the meeting, I was preoccupied with it. And I really couldn't work a program of any sort. I mean, I did manage to stay clean, believe it or not, but, you know, my thoughts were all skewed inside the rooms. And I mean, you know, I learned so much from that relationship. But it was everything that I tried to, I really didn't try to avoid, but it was everything that I was told to avoid from anybody in the room that had any time whatsoever or any good advice. And I don't know, it's just one of them things where I feel like, you know, my body was waking up with my mind and kind of took control of me. But man, I learned so much more after that, and it was something that was necessary to get me to the place where I was willing to take all the suggestions, not just the ones I wanted.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks, Craig. So Craig went right there with the romantic relationship. What about sharing some experience about just an early person that made you feel welcome?
Absolutely, I'm an addict. A real hang up about microphones, but I figured the only way to like break the ice is just to do it, because I learned in recovery it's necessary to be uncomfortable, but once the seal is broken, it gets a lot easier, right? So my first exposure to Narcotics Anonymous goes back a lot of years, and I was relatively new to Erie. I went from the homeless shelter to subsidized living, and there was a woman up there that I noticed every Sunday she would primp and preen. And then I would watch out the kitchen window and see her across the street, and now I know she was going to a meeting, but at the time I didn't know what it was about. But every week I'd ask her, like, well, what are you doing? And she's like, well, why don't you come find out? And I'd be like, why can't you just tell me? And she would just say, like, one of these days, you know, like she saw me, but, and I was looking at her, but she saw me, right? There's a difference. So I finally got up the courage and said, I want to go with you. Whatever it is, I need to find out. I was obsessed with trying to find out what she was doing at a church on a Sunday night, because it wasn't a service. That much I knew. So it came that Sunday, right? And so I primped and preened because I thought that was part of the process. And we were matching and coordinating, and I was prancing my way with her like, this is really exciting, until we crossed the street and everybody started hugging everybody. And somehow I had missed all of that for all the months that I had been staring at her. I didn't see anybody else, right? So we're all hugging, and they're like, nice to meet you, glad you're here. Like, and they just, I thought was kind of presumptuous. They knew why I was there, but I get it now. They were just glad I was there. And she was doing something that night, like a lead, and she had these rocks, and it was like something permanent, you know, and she was trying to share something to hold on to, because sometimes the emotional's not enough, that like in early recovery, I needed something tangible. And I still have that rock. And she also bought me my first basic text that night, like I'll never forget her. The value of that text increased once I was introduced to recovery, because I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, but I didn't know anything about recovery. So like I was feverish with the excitement of it, but like I didn't understand that who is an addict. You know, I couldn't look for the similarities. I was a little overwhelmed. It was too late, too sappy, too cultish, too, and she just kept encouraging me. And we became really good friends. Even though she stayed in the program, she would watch me run back and forth and just be like, I see you when you're ready, you know. And I was part of like her moving, you know, and it was like I was so sad to see her go, but it gave me just what I needed to, when I needed relief, I would run back to the rooms. I knew that much, that at least for that hour and a half, I was safe. Still didn't know what it was about, but like she was the one who introduced me to it, and I'm so grateful for it.
So a lot about what we do in early recovery is try to establish new relationships, right? Because people, places, and things out there are suggested to be things to avoid, so we need to fill that gap. So what did you do, or how did you establish a relationship with a we?
When I first got clean, I was really closed off. It took a while to like open up to anybody or to trust anybody. The first person that I made any type of relationship with was my sponsor, and that was still like not very, I was still very closed off, not willing to like open up or share a ton. It took a while for me to get a Wii. My Wii is still pretty small, but I do have one. That's it.
Thanks, Melissa. And then sponsorship is probably that other early relationship that is really crucial to, you know, our journey in recovery. So, Brandon, you want to talk a little bit about sponsorship?
Addict named Brandon. All right, so sponsorship. So the first, I was trying to do this recovery thing for a very, very long time and never getting it. I never listened to anybody or anything that anybody had to say, right? Because I thought I knew what I was doing. The first person that was my sponsor, who I somewhat listened to, is Silver Fox over here. But I didn't really listen to him, right? I mean, I didn't stay clean after that. what ended up happening is that I ended up going to prison, right? And one of the main things that I had an issue with, and probably a lot of you can feel this way, I didn't trust anybody, whether it was guy or girl or anything, right? Because in active addiction, like, I was getting over on you if I could, and you were going to get over on me if you could, right? So, like, there was a lot of betrayal, and there was a lot of just untrust. So that was one of the biggest things that I always thought was going to be a hard thing. And for me, in general, like, trusting another man was a hard thing just because I grew up and any male figure in my life left me for whatever reason, right? And I always thought it was me, so I had this really big thing about it. Finally, I went to prison, though, and, like, I'd been around the rooms long enough to know that I had to have trust in somebody. And so I went in there thinking, like, all right, I'm going to find this sponsor and I'm going to do it. So I was lucky enough to find a sponsor who came and visited me every week in prison. And I just had that rigorous honesty, that blunt, total, hands-on, open, bared everything with this guy, knowing very well that they could betray me, but he didn't. And that's not to say that, like, I mean, we're all human. I'm human, right? And I've yet to betray anybody in that way, shape, or form when it comes to the anonymity and the that we try to practice in this program when it comes to that. But it's always a possibility because we're human. So, like, I still need to have that faith in somebody, no matter what happened to me in the past. And it's extended to this now, like sponsorship. Like, my sponsor, who's not here right now, and I gave him a hard time for not being here, but, like, he knows everything about me. There's nothing that I will do in my life or have done in my life that I would not be willing to tell him. Because for me, not doing that, it's a secret to keep us sick. We hear that, right? So, like, the relationship with my sponsor was the most important thing for me at the time, because without being able to trust in them and build that relationship with them, I was definitely not going to build a relationship with the most important person in my life, which is me. And that sounds egotistical maybe, but, like, the relationship with myself is the most important to me, because if that's not going good, y'all fucked, right? There's no other relationship I'm going to be able to have with anybody else if I'm not okay with myself.
All right. What about, do any of you have an example of a time where maybe you disagreed with your sponsor or a sponsor suggestion, or maybe in service with a sponsor, and, you know, then were able to resolve that disagreement? Because I think, you know, that's something that's really beneficial.
Me in a disagreement. All right, I'm Sue, I'm an addict. I say the first sponsor I had, really, if I'm to be honest, would be the second sponsor I had, because I had a sponsor and then I took flight and came back years later. And so that would be my new sponsor. And at some point, it was over relationships, right? I was exploring dating sites and I told her that I was talking to this man in California, and she told me I was wasting my time. And I got really defensive. I said, yeah, but it's safe. I'm not trying to meet the guy. I'm just trying to learn how to have a conversation. So now we're dickering back and forth. And, like, she's trying to be reasonable, but I'm defensive because this is an area that I don't know much about, but I didn't feel like being told about it. So I got out and slammed the door. I was like, bye, love you, slam, right? So then I don't go in my building because she muttered something, and then she pulled up and I started crying. And I was like, okay, this is weird. And, like, I walked to my car because I was going to go chase her. And instead I called her on the phone and she answered. And then I started crying and I said, okay, I don't know what I'm doing, but whatever we have is worth saving. And I don't know what just happened, but I don't want to lose what we have, right? And that was, like, the first, like, healthy thing I did in a relationship, was, like, not want to lose it, like, fight for something good. Like, it wasn't, I don't know how to explain it. It was just worth saving, and I wasn't ready to let it go because I was reaping a lot of benefits from this relationship. Not in a financial way, just, like, I was growing, because of her presence in my life, and I felt like I had just severed it, you know? But I was scared to do that because what if she said no, or what if she didn't answer the phone, but she did, right? And it was scary and uncomfortable, but well received. And then we went on our merry little way after that. But like, I just, as soon as I heard Kelly mention that, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most crucial things we learn here is how to have disagreements and have them be healthy and practice forgiveness and not have to just take your ball and run away and go home. Let's talk about how that might work in a group conscience setting or area or any other like service commitment if there's been disagreements and how you've dealt with that. Craig, do you have any experience with that?
My name is Craig. I'm an You know, once I got to a point where I got really involved in service as far as the area goes, and I was actually chair, I realized that when I was in those meetings that a lot of things that were going on in there just felt really uncomfortable. You know, I mean, all I knew along the way was, hey, all you had to do was want to stay clean and everything else would fall in place. But I realized that it just seemed like more of an ego trip in these meetings, and I felt like it wasn't really me, I mean, to be honest. And I can remember that I had to set myself down and say, hey, is this going to be you, or can you give your service in other ways? And so what I realized, my niche was more in the sponsor capacity than it was really sitting down with one of those area positions, because I found myself wanting to get argumentative, and I knew that it wasn't good for my peace. So I literally had to, I made that decision. And once I did that, I kind of realized that we don't all have to be everything in here, just like in real life. There's managers, and then there's no managers. And I felt like sponsorship fit me well, because I was good with the one-on-one, and I was able to give what I had received, and I felt really comfortable doing that. And so that's really the path that I took the rest of the way. And I didn't regret it in any way, because I really respected the people that are in the service capacities to do stuff like put on retreats and everything that has to be due administrative wise. It just wasn't a part of my makeup.
All right, I've got some written questions as well, so I'm going to try to pull from some of those. So, from the committee. When have I allowed someone's personality to cloud my judgment or behavior? What could I have done differently, and what did I learn from that situation?
I'm an addict. My name's Brandon. I need to do that every time. So like my home group, Saturday Night Fever, right? It was not always called Saturday Night Fever. We originally called it Saturday Night Cotton Fever, right? And when that came out, I thought it was cool as shit, right? It's a play on words. And choke up on it. Yeah, I'll choke it. Come here, Mr. Microphone. Y'all shouldn't have gave me a mic. But anyways, like when we first, you know, thought up the name, right? I thought it was cool to play on words. A lot of people, A, didn't know what it meant, right? So that confused it. Then when they found out what it meant, they were disgusted by it, right? It caused a huge stir. And this goes back to our traditions that each group is autonomous, right? Except when it affects other groups or NA as a whole. And, you know, people who care about me, my moral compass, one of them, Kelly over there, brought it to my attention. And I thought about it and I brought it to the group conscience and they're like, forget it. We like it still, right? But it got to a point to where a lot of people were approaching me about this and my personality got in the way. And I was like, fuck all of you. I think it's a badass name. I think it's cool. And that's where my mindset was. And it got to the point to where somebody who's not here tonight, unfortunately, that I was hoping would be here, created quite a huge stir at the area level to where, like, we were pretty angry at each other, right? And bottom line is whether you like the name or not, think it's okay or not, it affected NA as a whole. It affected a lot of people in a negative way, and that's not what we wanted to do because our primary purpose is to carry this message to addicts who can, you know, still suffering, right? So the name's changed, Saturday Night Fever, come on out, John Travolta style, you know what I mean? We'll get it done for you, right? It's a great meeting, but, like, the relationship with this person, so, like, didn't really know this person that well. And I decided that I don't like having resentments. I don't like being angry with somebody over something as the aim of a meeting, right? So it started off, I asked this person to come do H&I with me at Gaudenzia, right? And I got to hear his story, and I'm not going to tell his story, and I'm not going to get too much into it, but, like, I'm like, God damn, this dude's fucking cool, right? And I've had a few conversations with him since then, and, like, it's somebody I extremely respect his recovery. I extremely respect the person that he is. And if I would have continued to let my personality stop me from practicing the principles of this program that I so love and dearly care for, I might not have gotten to know this dude. And don't get me wrong, it's not like we're best friends or anything, right? But I wouldn't mind being, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I would hang out. I was looking forward to this because of that reason. And I don't know what the original question is, but that's all I got.
All right. Next question is, do I tend to react emotionally to people I dislike, even if they are doing or saying the right thing, and how do I stop that? This is like, I'm not making eye contact right now. But there's only four of you, so can I give you that question?
Can you repeat the question?
Sure.
Oh, sorry.
Do I tend to react emotionally to people I dislike, even if they're doing and saying the right thing, and how do I stop that?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I've gotten a lot better at it. But in my head, if I don't like you, you're not doing the right thing. Like, I've already decided that even if it aligns with what I believe, like, it's probably wrong. Like, somewhere in there, it's probably wrong. But, you know, I think that was because I enjoyed confrontation for so long, and it was something that I was really comfortable with. And when I got clean and I started going through step work, and because I didn't understand that about myself for a long time, that I was just an asshole because I enjoyed being an asshole. I don't enjoy being an asshole so much. Sometimes, though, if someone sparks something in me that, you know, it's still in me, it's still there, but I have more awareness to be able to step back and understand that I am being emotionally driven and that it's something that's probably superficial and petty. So, yeah, that was it.
What do I do when someone I love or am close to breaks a principle I stand for, and how do I address it with them? Yeah.
I tell them about themselves right away. Like, I do, especially if I care about them. Choke it.
Just hold it by the silver thing, and then the weight of the mic, there you go.
The weight of the mic. pushing it together. So, God save me. When I see somebody I love and care about, and like they're breaking a principle or they're doing something that I don't think they should be doing, I absolutely tell them about themselves, right? Because I care and love about them. And I think that's driven from the fact that I needed people to do that to me. I had so many enablers in my life when I was in active addiction that like I appreciate it when some, like that's what I, like my first sponsor that I lived in prison, like he told me about myself, right? He didn't let me get away from shit. There weren't suggestions. It was work the steps or die, motherfucker. That's how it was, right? And so like I needed that. And I've gotten in trouble with this because I would go around like people I barely knew and I would tell them about themselves, right? And you know, hence why some people love me, other people hate me, right? But now I do it with care and love and compassion, right? I'm not doing it because I want to be a dick. Sometimes I come across that way, but like bottom line is there's people I care about and I want to see them succeed. I want them to see them do good. So if I see something that I don't agree with that they're doing, I'm going to say something about it. Especially my sponsees.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on that. I was thinking about where I've come to a place in my program right now of what I realize, what I first thought when I came here, that I wouldn't do anything if somebody told me to do it. And, you know, I think about the love that was in these rooms that looked after me to be constructive with their criticism so that it didn't hurt my feelings and bounce me back out the door. So I'm always very careful because I never know that moment when an addict's gonna get this program, because for the longest time, I didn't. I didn't want it, I didn't get it. But there was one moment in a meeting at some point where I realized I wanted all of it. And thank God I kept coming back. So that I have what I have today, but also too in my family, because my children, they do things a lot of times where I know they have the genes and they have some addictive personality to them and they have a moment where they can go to the left. And so I'm very careful to just explain my experience and not be too critical about them. So that I turn them away and I lose them or our relationship. So there's a fine line in there where I can see where they're doing some things wrong, but I remember all the things I did wrong before I really got to the point of grabbing a hold of this thing. So there's a fine line for me to be able to handle them and other addicts too when they're bouncing in and out of here, that I'm more of an arbitrator or a harmonizer, I guess you can say, to where I like to walk the walk, talk the talk, and have the promotion be the attraction of what they see and not necessarily driving it down their throat. So it made me think of that right away with the relationships that I have today.
So sponsorship got brought up a little bit. Let's talk about being a sponsor and, you know, just maybe what you've learned about that in your time in sponsoring others, maybe about how to have boundaries or, you know, how to allow people to be where they're at. So you want to do that one?
All right. Still Sue, still an addict. So sponsorship is where, like I heard another addict share, finding that niche, you know, for service work, because the basics, get a home group, attend meetings, get a sponsor and work the steps. And I really emotionally, mentally, like just everything began to blossom for me in the role of a sponsor. It allowed me to practice my principles, you know, and learn practicing mainly that compassionate one. Because the way I could deliver the same message to one sponsee, but I would have to deliver it differently to another because of the way they received information. And it's so precious to me that trust factor, that like, that's just, I blurt things, I'm kind of foul mouthed, but that relationship with my sponsees is so sacred because that's what I received. But it's not only because I received it, it's because I believe in this program so much and I don't want to violate somebody else's attraction to the program. You know, it's almost like an obligation that I'm very happy to perform. You know, that like they're putting everything they have into me. And then I say, no, you're putting everything you have into you by doing these steps. I'm just sharing how I got through my steps, but you're doing all the work. So it's like something I'd love to do, but I take no credit for. And it's really fulfilling that way. And then when I see them blossom and take off, and then really looking for the similarities when they are sharing their steps with me, I'm like, you too? Like, it's just such a, it's so intimate. Like it really, because for me, intimacy was like man, woman, sex. That was it, right? But I've learned in this program that like the intimacy I have like with my sponsees is just beyond measure. And I love sponsorship. I love being a sponsee and having a sponsorship family. I refer to it as my herd. And when one is straying, like, you know, we need to get her back in the herd. You know, like it's just our little, I don't know, it's our family. So thanks.
So a lot of what happens in the rooms, in service, in sponsorship helps us learn about relationships, and then we get to go and practice that in all of our affairs. So maybe talk about a time where there was a difficulty in a relationship outside of NA and how you practiced principles you learned here.
I don't know that I really have an example for outside. The question is how, like, I had a...
So how you've applied the principles that you learned here to relationships out there?
Yeah, I can't really answer. I work, and I don't have it. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Does anybody else want to take that?
So like I do, like the only people I hang out with outside of the rooms is at work, right? That's just where it is for the most part. And like I think about, I do not being told what to do. I don't know if anybody can relate to that. So like I have this boss, and this boss. I'm pretty good at what I do, right? And so when I'm told how to do something better and try to be given advice from work, so like I'm in sales, so like when my boss tries to give me ideas on things to do, like my first thought is like, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about, I know what I'm doing, and I don't want to listen. What I've learned in this program is even though that like I might be good at something, I can still learn and I got to remain teachable, right? So like, whenever those instances come up with anything when it comes to work and somebody wants to give me an idea or do it, I've learned to be open-minded and at least willing to try, right? Those spiritual principles that we learn in this program, I try to carry it out to especially work because I want to strive to be better. The other thing that I do a lot with my relationships outside, like when it comes to work, is I want to help people and I like to see them grow. That's my favorite thing about this program is seeing people grow. And I do my best to help others at work and not be selfish with my time when somebody might ask me about something, right? So that's how I carry it over outside of work or outside of this program. Go Birds.
One of the things that I thought about just then was not only work, but family. What I've realized that the relationships that I have in these rooms, I seem to have more patience with the people or the other addicts in the rooms than I do with my family, or even my manager, my work-related employees. And I don't know why that is. Also, too, I realized that I can be more sensitive to maybe a one-on-one from a manager, and I have to pull out my toolkit sometimes, really, to say, hey, you know, it's not a personal thing. He's doing his job, and of course, he's trying to make a perfect employee. So I always think about that, because I've done so much work in here with my relationships in here, but I do have to pull out my toolkit quite often with family and my workers. So, and it's something that I try to make sure that I do.
Do any of you have experience with ending a relationship, maybe leaving a job, or, you know, having a friendship end or a romantic relationship end in recovery, and kind of how did you deal with that? And if you were able to apply principles, how did that go? Or maybe you weren't, and what you wish you would have done different?
I've had a friendship end recently, and it was rough. But before it had ended, I tried to, you know, do all the things that, you know, you're supposed to do to avoid that friendship from ending. Have honest conversations, be blunt sometimes. But these conversations became so continuous. They would just happen again and again, to where, you know, it just came to a point where I finally had to just cut them off. I feel kind of bad about it, because there wasn't really an explanation, but there is. Like, there's those conversations happen so many times, and boundaries were crossed, and I needed to protect my peace. So I guess quietly cut it off, so that there wasn't that, you know, big explosion at the end. So
The other relationship I don't think we've touched on yet at all is a relationship with a higher power. And so does anybody want to share, you know, how that is currently working in your life, or how you got to a place where you got a working relationship, or maybe it's still an area that's a struggle? Craig, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I can honestly say that every day that I wake up is dependent on how spiritually fit I am for the day. And you know, I remember first getting to step 2 and 3, how I struggled to find a higher power, and how I asked several other addicts how they got there, because I was waiting for the lightning to come through the window, and it never quite happened that way, you know. And what I realized was, over time, as I grew, I was able to develop my higher power relationship or connection by just making good decisions and being a better person and trying to be more like my creator in my mind. And I was honest. And, you know, when I lived that way, I didn't create any more chaos. I didn't lose any more friends or hurt any more people. And it just seems to work for me today as well. I mean, when I get up today, I have to do what I did yesterday to maintain that spiritual condition. And, you know, I don't look at it as clean time, you know, I don't look at it as any type of duration, because it's a daily reprieve. And I honestly believe that, because my clarity is based on what I do that day, because I can go off in either direction sometimes when I don't need to on anything, even today, you know. So I have to maintain balance. I have to stay spiritually fit. And I have to treat others the way I want to be treated. And, you know, when I do that, honestly, my life is easy. You know, I'm in a really nice place, and I've got some good peace. And even days when I don't get much rest the night before, I can find a way to get there the next day if I stay on course with my daily reprieve.
Hello?
Yes.
I'm holding it from the bottom. So about the higher power, right? Early on, I struggled with that concept, and because we use that word God so frequently and loosely in the program, I was inclined to think that was going to be my higher power, right? But as I was developing and working the steps, I loved that, like, I could create my higher power in a sense, like by listing the characteristics of what my higher power had and didn't have. And it's kind of like a hot rod for me. Like, I tweak it as I go, because as I grow, it grows too. That I'm not a God-fearing woman nor a God-denying woman. You know, I was able to discern that, like, what works for you doesn't necessarily it's going to work for me. Just like my higher power might not be a good fit for you. But all that the literature suggests is that it be caring and loving and want better for me, you know? And that's really just the key ingredients, you know? Because sometimes I'll squabble with my higher power because, and then it lets me know that, like, I'm trying to insert my will into it because I want the agreement, but, like, my spirit will let me know that, hey, it's not in alignment, you know? And it's just really important for me to remain open-minded and willing and honest that, like, when that takes place, to not deny it and to, like, honor my spirit. And that's how, like, my higher power communicates with me and vice versa.
So I'm just sitting here. I'm looking outside right now, right? And my higher power is the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and the spiritual principles we practice, right? And as I'm sitting here looking outside, I see over here on the right is Troy talking to this other guy. So, like, I think when I'm seeing these conversations are going on, right? Every single conversation that's going on, it seems like somebody with a lot of clean time and recovery talking to somebody who's newer, right? And some of them aren't so new, but, like, just that therapeutic value of one addict helping another. It's just, I love it. And I don't know if they're talking about recovery. I don't know if they're talking about just football or whatever, right? Go Birds. You know it's coming. But, like, it's just that it's fucking awesome. Like, my higher power is you guys. And I know that when I have an answer to a question that I can't, when I have a question that I don't have an answer to myself, I can bring it to these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And I will be directed somewhere, whether it's to the steps, whether it's to something in the basic text, whether it's to another addict who already been through that experience, right? I'll find the answer to all my questions in Narcotics Anonymous. Even if they tell me, you need to go see a psychiatrist, Brandon, because you're fucked, which has happened, you know?
All right, how about, were there any patterns that you learned about yourself from step work that helped you change how you show up to relationships? Maybe defects you found in step six, or, you know, something you were making amends for a lot that you were able to let go of a behavior?
Yeah, there was a few defects that I found. Most of the pattern that I found in my step four had to do with the fear, guilt, low self-esteem, selfishness. I mean, almost every situation that I ran into where I felt like it was a major happening in my life, those seemed to surface. You know, so when I got to step six, I knew what I had to work on. And, you know, I'm not going to say all my defects, I got rid of all of them, but I kind of sanded a few of them down, and I don't act on them, you know, to where I feel like I'm going to hurt myself or anybody else. So I realize I'm still an addict, and, you know, and I keep that in the foremost of my head. You know, it's like, but when it comes to a pattern, you know, I have to realize that I still have to maintain my program and my step work on a daily basis, you know? And usually if I do that, I'm in a good place. I mean, it's crazy because back in the day, man, I mean, I would just rip through life and not really care about what I left behind, you know? And I realized that just wasn't a good thing. And so I've dealt with my past to be able to move forward, and I've sanded or at least worked on the defects that give me the peace I have today, and I have a good connection with HP. So, I mean, as far as what's gone on, I can't change anything, but I still have to maintain the fact that, hey, you know what, those defects are still waiting, you know, and it wouldn't take one bad turn here or there, and I could kick them in pretty strong. So I don't lose sight of that fact.
All right, I've got just one last question I'm gonna ask, and then I'm gonna have each of you answer it. And Brandon, you're gonna go first, and then we'll just pass the mic across. So describe the relationships in your life today, talking to yourself when you first showed up here. And, you know, so basically, like, look back at the Brandon that came to NA and tell him what your life is like today. Focus on relationships.
Hey, Brandon, you're a fucking idiot.
No, not what it was, what it is now.
Oh, what it is now. So today, the relationship I have with people, I mean, it goes back to, I guess, what Craig was talking about, like these characters. So any issues I had with relationships with people today is going to either be, any rifts in it's going to be because of self-centeredness or self-serenity. And I just made that shit up on the spot, that self-serenity. So like the self-centeredness is I want to make it about me. And you guys, you're wrong because of something about me. The self-serenity is like, y'all fucked up and I need to take care of myself right now, right? But the relationships I have with people today are, if I'm honest and have open communication with them, it thrives. I think about the most turmoil I had in the past in my relationships is because there was a lack of that. And I was very self-centered. Now it's like I try to put other people first. Try, keyword, right? Because I don't always. I guess I still don't understand your question, but that's my answer.
Yes, for clarification, it's like when you would tell yourself when you first got here all the things that your life was going to be like, you would have sold yourself short. Like how, like describe to, you know, just picture that version of you. You don't understand.
Okay, no, I'm going to run with it. I think okay. I do understand okay. It because in all the changes took place between step one and step 12, and each step presented something that allowed me to grow in. Example, first year clean, I really hadn't worked a lot of steps yet. I was in a program, but I was offered a job at the courthouse, Beery County. And my first response was, fuck no. Why? No. Like, why would you even offer me a job at the courthouse? That's fucking insane, right? Only then to work some steps and then a year later accept that job. You know, because things were changing where like I became flexible. I didn't want from you, I wanted for you. And you weren't even part of the equation in my early recovery because it was all about Sue. You know, so really like the perspective changed, and I wanted a car and I was able to get a car. Like I wanted the tangible stuff, but that's where I sold myself short. And then like the steps, and I kept plugging along because more was revealed later. Each step presented something, and like step six is still my favorite because it was that enlightenment that I had choices. I could be a shitty neighbor or I could be a good neighbor. I could be a good employee. I'm friendly to most everybody. Like Billy, the homeless guy who knows I quit smoking, he says, sucks for him, but good for me. You know, like, and I could just be a jerk to him just because he, whatever, but I don't, right? I learned these spiritual principles that came with the steps, and like the spiritual growth, the emotional growth, the mental stability, the serenity. You know, for me, I realize is when my insides are in harmony with my outsides, and it's because of the choices that I make about the people, places, and things. And all these things I learned from this program, but I didn't just hold it and keep it to myself. I learned to give it away because I like what I have, where before I was selfish and I would keep everything to myself. Like, get your own. You better get it like Tyson. Like, you know, and that's not how this program works. So, like, I just kind of morphed into this caring person. And all of these emotional feelings weren't part of like my vision of what I was going to attain in recovery, you know? And the key to that is just to remain teachable.
Well, from what I understood, you were talking about how are relationships different in active addiction compared to now.
So,
I was super codependent in active addiction. I had really high expectations of everyone. I didn't tell anyone what I expected them from them, but I expected them to meet that. I destroyed my relationship with my kids. I didn't know how to have a conversation with anybody that was genuine. I still have a really hard time with that today. But comparatively, you know, I've built a relationship with my kids. I lost my son. He lives with me now. He's active in his sports, and I'm helping him with that. And that's such a blessing. My older kids come to me for advice, which is amazing. I get along with this guy who's my ex-husband, for you guys that don't know. We have kids together. My best friend is his wife, which is awesome. So I don't have, expectations was a huge theme in my step work. Man, I really needed you to be this thing. And if you weren't, fuck you. And I don't know, to navigate that and to not be that way and to learn more about myself and to, I'm a supervisor at my job. Like I guide people and lead them. That's crazy. I don't know. I'm still learning a lot about, you know, relationships and just sponsorship and friendship. I was really concerned when you guys asked me to be on this panel because I feel like I really don't know enough about it. But I'm learning. I'm always learning.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I thought about when I first got here of who I was and what I would say to myself, you know, and initially it was just like, and if I just get the poison out, you know, I'm going to be fine. And I had no idea what was coming, you know, with these steps. And as I was growing, you know, it's crazy because I thought everything had to do with the outside. You know, I mean, I was chasing the Joneses forever. You know, it was always about the cars, the house, the girl, you know, everything that made me look cool, you know. And once I began to work the steps and I realized it was an inside job, and then it really didn't cost me a thing to have the inside. It just took a little bit of work. That's what blew me away most of all. I mean, honestly, because it was said that it was all about me when I got here, and there was a point in there when it was about you. And once that shifted to you, and I had my peace of mind that I was in a good place, then my whole life became easier. And, you know, the obsession and compulsion went away for a lot of things that needed to happen. But it was that inside job that I love the most about this program. And all my relationships today, I look for the light. You know, even if somebody's saying something I don't agree with, they have light. And there's a positivity side to them because God didn't make any mistakes, man. And I really feel that way. So I feel like that's what puts this world together, man, is to have different people, personalities, different thoughts and ideas. And that's how we get things done. So I respect the people that have what I don't have and that I can't do. But it's that inside job that gives me what I have today in my family, in my job, with my friends, my NA family. It's all about, again, my spiritual condition. Because when I'm looking at you and trying to have empathy and compassion for what's going on in you, then I'm outside of myself, you know, and that's where I like to be. That's when I'm in my best place.
Answer that question for us, Kelly.
I'm Kelly, I'm an addict. When I was thinking of that question, I just, you know, when I got here, what I thought I really wanted or what would give me freedom or peace of mind is so different from what it actually has become. So, you know, when I got here, I thought that relationship that I was in was going to get fixed, and it didn't. But what I'd want her to know is that that was the best thing that could have happened to me, right? And that I would meet completely different people, who that I could really trust and open up with and be myself with, and that I was enough, you know, just how I was. Like, I didn't have to keep trying to force relationships to work or to chase people or to hang on to things. to validate that I was good enough, right? That like I was enough just for being here and being a member of NA. All the other stuff is like extra, right? Because you guys give me the unconditional love that I was always looking for. So thanks so much for being part of the panel. We can close it out with a prayer. All right, let's do the third step prayer. Many of us have said,